Welcome to the third episode of Mobile Podcast, your exclusive insight into the major public interest issues affecting the mobile telecommunications industry. I'm your host, Peter Russell, and in this edition we will speak with the University of Pennsylvania bioengineer, Dr. Ken Foster, about the controversy surrounding Wi-Fi devices, whether different signals are more biologically active, and whether the current level of scientific uncertainty justifies precautionary measures. As a professor of bioengineering, Dr. Foster has worked with the University of Pennsylvania for more than 30 years, focusing on the impact of non-ionizing radiation on biological systems and the biomedical application of radio frequency energy. Dr. Foster's academic achievements include more than 100 technical papers in peer-reviewed journals and numerous articles on technology and health. Dr. Foster is also a fellow of the Institute of Electrical and Electronics Engineers, has authored two books titled Phantom Risk and Judging Science. Mobile Podcast is honoured to have Dr. Foster as its guest. Ken, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. Nice to be here.
Ken, you recently conducted the largest study examining exposures from Wi-Fi or wireless LAN networks. How did you measure the radio signals and what did you find?
Well, this was an industry-supported study where I took a sensitive radio frequency receiver to more than 50 different sites in four countries, and I measured the signals from the Wi-Fi networks as well as other radio frequency signals in the environment. In all cases, and these were taken in ordinary residential settings, apartments, coffee houses, some business sites, stores, and other public areas. And in all cases, I found that the total radio frequency energy in the environment was far below international safety limits, as you would expect. But also the signals from the wireless LANs were in all cases small compared to other signals already present in the environment from mobile base stations, commercial broadcast facilities, and other sources. So I would conclude that radio frequency signals from wireless LANs are present, but generally small compared to other sources that people might ordinarily encounter.
Ken, given that this is such a large study, how long did it take to actually do this work?
I took, I think, maybe four trips to Europe. Measurements were done over a 3 or 4 month period.
So what do you make of the recent controversy, particularly in the UK, over wireless networks in schools?
I think it has to be interpreted in social terms rather than health terms. I believe that people are afraid of new technologies, and this has been resulted in health concerns. I don't believe that there's any scientific evidence to justify such health concerns.
What about combined exposures from using many wireless devices close to the body, such as Wi-Fi laptops, mobile phones, and Bluetooth headsets? Will this pose a risk to health?
The exposure limits are based upon the total exposure you get from all sources, and if you have exposure from many very weak sources, which you do here, the total exposure is still a tiny fraction of the safety standards, and so on that basis I would not expect any problem at all.
Current safety standards for radio signals are based on limiting potential health hazards due to heating. How were the levels established, and what safety factors are involved?
Present safety limits, which are in effect in most of Europe and the United States, are based upon research done over the years involving exposure of animals and more recently people to radio frequency energy, and they were designed to protect against all established hazards which are associated with too much heating of tissue. The safety limits are quite conservative, with safety factors of 10 to 50 in exposure, which means that if you are exposed at a present limit, your exposure is approximately 50 times below those which might be expected to cause any adverse effect under worst-case conditions.
Over time, there have been various other mechanisms suggested as ways that the energy from radio signals could interact with the human body at levels too low to cause heating. You've looked at some of these theories. What is your conclusion? Are there any other plausible mechanisms?
I've actually been in this field since 1971, and almost every year I've come across a new theory that someone has proposed about how weak radio waves might cause biological damage, and none of these stand up to any kind of scrutiny. So after 30 years of hearing about this, I'm somewhat skeptical whether there are mechanisms by which low-level radio waves could cause injury. I certainly have seen no clear evidence of any mechanism that stands up to any scientific credibility.
People say that their ear gets hot when using a mobile phone, and this worries them. How much heating is involved during a mobile phone call?
Well, the radio frequency energy itself will heat up tissues in your head of a few tenths of a degree at most. But by comparison, simply putting a plastic receiver case against your head will cause more heating just because of the insulation of the plastic, and also the circuits and electronics will also cause some heating. So the maximum temperature increase in your ear may be a degree or more, but most of that is just due to putting a thermal insulation against your head, not because of the radiation.
Let's talk a little about another area of interest for you. That is the precautionary principle. As I understand it, Ken, the precautionary principle is based on taking action under conditions of scientific uncertainty. For example, the World Health Organization states that more research has been conducted on electromagnetic fields, and for many chemicals, yet science will never prove absolute safety. Ken, can you explain whether the precautionary principle is relevant in these circumstances?
Well, precautionary principle means many different things to different people. The most accepted interpretation comes from the European Commission, which says that you should use the precautionary principle when you have reason to suspect a problem but don't know its dimensions. For instance, it would be used to recommend that people not eat too much tuna fish because of the fear that there is mercury contamination. Since governments have not found any health effect from using mobile phones, it doesn't seem to make sense to make precautionary recommendations.
Some authorities have referred to the precautionary principle to justify recommendations that children should limit usage of mobile phones or to set standards that are more restrictive than those recommended by the World Health Organization. What do you think of those recommendations, Ken?
The authorities I know about are from the British government, and it doesn't make sense for me for them to say that the balance of evidence is that there are no health effects from exposure to radio waves below their national limits, and at the same time make precautionary recommendations. It seems to me that this is simply responding to fear of the unknown, not to counter any suspected health risk. And if that's the situation, I think that parents should be free to make their own decisions, weigh the costs and benefits of their children using mobile phones, and not have the issue clouded by poorly justified recommendations on the part of health authorities.
Ken, how much is enough research? Will we reach the stage where we have more than proved the safety of mobile phones?
I think that the chances, after decades of research, that scientists will find significant health hazards from radio waves at low levels, such as used by mobile phones, is probably not very great. On the other hand, technology always has unintended consequences, and I think it's prudent to be on the lookout for new consequences of using mobile phones, which may not be health effects, but may involve interference with devices or things like this. And so I think that it's prudent to continue searching for possible hazards, but recognizing that these may not be health-related.
Thank you, Ken. It's been a pleasure having you on Mobile Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Mobile Podcast would like to thank Dr. Ken Foster for giving up his time to appear on the program. We would also like to thank you for listening and hope you enjoy the third episode produced in June 2007. Mobile Podcast will be available for download regularly at www.mmfai.org/mobilepodcast or www.gsmworld.com/help. Mobile Podcast is made available for download by the Mobile Manufacturers Forum and the GSM Association. The information contained on this podcast is provided for general information purposes only and does not purport to offer legal, health, or any other professional advice. Where reference is made to a company or a specific commercial product or service, howsoever referred, no endorsement or recommendation is implied or intended. The views expressed are those of the speaker alone and do not necessarily represent those of the Mobile Manufacturers Forum or GSM Association. All guests have volunteered their time to help promote an open discussion of the issues addressed.